You're listening to Wolves Potluck.
And hey, welcome to Books and Boba, a book club and podcast featuring books by Asian and Asian American authors. My name is Marvin Yue.
And I'm Rira Yu.
And we are here today to discuss our January 2026 book club pick, Reef, a novel by Romesh Gunasekera. As always, Books and Boba is supported in part by you, our listeners. So if you've been enjoying our podcast and want to become a bigger part of our book club, head on over to patreon.com/booksandboba, where as an official Patreon supporter, you gain access to our members-only Discord server, where you can chat with us and fellow book club members in real time about all sorts of topics, including our book club picks. And if you join us at the Honey Boba level, you also gain access to our monthly bonus podcast, Boba Chats, as well as the opportunity to help us pick a patron's choice book club pick once per quarter. And this month's pick, Reef, was a patron's choice. So thank you to all of our book club members who helped us with the selection process. Yeah, Rira, we've made it through 1 month of 2026. How do you feel? It's been a billion years again, right?
January is always the slowest month. But I am excited because we are approaching the Winter Olympics. Figure skating starts on February 6th, and I have to figure out all of the time conversions because I do want to watch it. I do want to watch it live. I have to go find my streams. We actually have a chance as Americans, which is insane to me.
I have been enjoying all the videos of our figure skating team, especially the women's team. They seem like a fun bunch.
Yeah, it's been a long time since we've had like a strong women's figure skating team that is like a good contender to actually get the pedestal, actually get to stand on the pedestal, because it's always been dominated by Russians and Japanese. And the Japanese skaters are really strong too. Like Kaori Sakamoto is like a big contender to win gold. So I'm like, okay, let's see how it goes. Usually I'm more interested in the men's skating. So I'm really, really glad that I get to be excited for both disciplines.
Yeah.
And also the Shibutani siblings are making a comeback. So I'm like, okay, great to see. I have not seen their new program, so I'm very, very excited. And it is an exciting time for me, let me just say. And it's been great for skating overall. I mean, not just figure skating, but heated rivalry. And I know the actors of Heated Rivalry, they were torchbearers. So I was like, okay, great. Like, I feel like people are going to get more into hockey, and hopefully there'll be some converts into figure skating. We'll see.
All right. Well, we're not here to talk all about the upcoming Olympics, although we probably will be chatting about that in our next Boba Chat, because it is coming up very, very soon. We are here, of course, to talk about Reef, our January book club pick. As always, before we get started, here's your standard spoiler warning. In our book club discussions, we will be discussing our book club pick in its entirety, including all character arcs, story beats, and any plot twists. So if you have not finished the book and care about being spoiled about that stuff, this is your cue to hit pause on the podcast and finish reading. We'll be here when you're done. But otherwise, if you finished reading the book, or if you don't care about being spoiled, I guess we can get started. So Rira, can you kick off our discussion with the book jacket description of Reef by Romesh Gunasekera?
Triton loved living in Mr. Salgado's house. It was the biggest house he had ever seen, filled with floors to sweep and silver to polish and meals to cook and adults to impress and a brilliant master whose voice was poetry. And people from all over the world came to the house to sell their wares, to talk, to live, for this was where life took place. Even the sun would rise from the garage and sleep behind the dell tree at night, and in the house, life was good. But beyond Mr. Salgado's house and their Sri Lankan village, there was a world, and all around them, it was falling apart. So this book came out in 1994. It was nominated as a Booker Prize finalist, and the author, Ramesh Gunasekara. Just to give a little background to our readers, he grew up in Sri Lanka and the Philippines. He was born in Colombo to a Sinhalese Christian family. His father was a founder of the Asian Development Bank. And later on, when he was a teen, they moved to Liverpool in 1971, and he still currently lives in England. And his first book, Monkfish Moon, was a collection of short stories reflecting the ethnic and political tensions that have threatened Sri Lanka since independence. And pretty much like Reef, I think, is like a continuation of his first book in a way, because I feel like Reef was it kind of felt like a series of short stories as well.
Yeah, I mean, Reef is it's structured in a very interesting way, right? Because you start off in the future, or in the future, our past, like in the 90s, with our main character Triton being like an older, experienced immigrant in England, interacting with a newer refugee from Sri Lanka. And, you know, what's interesting is something that everyone in our book club, and I'm assuming yourself as well, Rira, this book led us to go down a rabbit hole on Sri Lankan history, specifically the Sri Lankan Civil War, right? And, you know, when this book was published, the Civil War was still ongoing. Like, the Civil War in Sri Lanka lasted from the early 70s to, like, 2009. So it's, like, a very long-running conflict that was constantly generating refugees.
You know, it's, like, really interesting because, like, as Americans, I feel like we don't really know much about the Sri Lankan Civil War. At least, like, for me, that was the case. But since this book is British, like, it was published by a British publisher, I wonder if the audience was, like, more aware of what was happening. Because, you know, there were a lot of Sri Lankan refugees, and also, you know, Sri Lanka was a British colony for a while. So it does make me wonder, like, what history the original audience knew about. And also, we're reading this like in like 2026. So like, history is a little bit like removed at that point.
I mean, history is interesting, right? Especially as children of immigrants ourselves, like, I'm not familiar with our history. I only know bits and pieces of like the Chinese Civil War and World War II from like anecdotal stories from my grandparents or my parents, but like, I don't have like a deep knowledge of that. And you know, that idea of like history being around us but not really like front and center, I think, is a major theme in this book, right? Because this book takes place in the lead up to the Civil War, where tensions are simmering, but it's also always in the background, right? It's all because this book is very, it's a very focused story, right? This is about Triton and his life in service of Mr. Salgado as his like only staffer, right? Like, he's the only caretaker of Mr. Salgado's home, and that's like his entire world.
Yeah, they have a very codependent relationship, even for like a master-servant relationship. It's very interesting because Salgado didn't abandon Triton in Sri Lanka. Like, he actually brought him with him to England when he like found a new job at like the Institute of like Marine Biology or whatever. And, you know, they stayed together for a very long time past like leaving Sri Lanka. So it is a very interesting interesting master-servant relationship that we don't really see. And also, it's like very, very codependent. So we'll talk a little bit more about that later. So I know for a lot of our Discord members, like, we had to look up a lot of Sri Lankan history in order to just get a little bit more context. Even though this book is mostly about like the domestic world, about kind of like the garden of Eden for Triton and his like coming of age story, like the background and the rising tension of like Sri Lankan Civil War is happening. And I feel like because we didn't, if you don't know the history as well, I feel like you don't feel the tension as intensely. So I'm just going to briefly go over like historical background so we kind of like know what's happening. So the book takes place, or it begins after the little prologue, in 1962, when Triton is pretty much sold into servitude for Mr. Salgado, 1962 has been described by the characters as the year of the bungled coup. So just a little bit of background. 1948, Ceylon, which is what the British called Sri Lanka at the time, won independence from the British Empire. And then in 1956, the government abolished the Senate and made Sinhala the national language through the Sinhala Only Act, which further alienated the Tamil-speaking minority. And because of this act, violent riots arose because people were saying, like, you are oppressing the Tamil minority. So in 1972, Ceylon is renamed Sri Lanka. The Tamil New Movement merges with a radical military group, and they become the Liberation Tigers of Tamil Eelam, LTTE. 1983, LTTE killed 13 soldiers, which triggers an anti-Tamil riot in Colombo, and it pretty much snowballs into civil war. And in 1993, Sri Lankan President Ranasinghe Premadasa was assassinated. So we pretty much get to the point of the publication of Reef at that time. That is the climate that Reef was published. So very, very topical.
Yeah. I'm wondering, did you do this research while reading the book or afterwards? Because I kind of feel like reading the book without the historical context actually kind of made the experience a little bit more like immersive, right? Like I'm reminded of like our own situation here in America, which is like, do you remember how much of a luxury it was to like just not care about politics, not to like think about what our senators and representatives are doing, or more accurately, not doing? Because like if your government is working as intended, like you really don't need to think about it, right? Like you don't need to worry about whether or not your, you know, elected officials are screwing you like every day, right? And you kind of feel that in this story, like the people within the Salgado household, even as tensions are rising in Sri Lanka, it didn't really feel like it encroached the walls of the residence. You know, for Triton, whose entire world is that house, like he didn't really feel like he needed to worry about what was going on until it got to the point where, you know, order broke down and he couldn't ignore it any longer. And by then it was already too late.
Yeah. Like what's interesting is that Mr. Salgado is, you know, amateur marine biologist. And one of the things that he's really interested in is the reef that is surrounding Sri Lanka. And that, you know, the book's title is Reef. And that is kind of a metaphor for post-colonial structure in Sri Lanka. It is delicate and easily damaged by what is happening in the environment. I mean, for the reef, it's overfishing, erosion, war. And pretty much, like I said, it's a metaphor. So like the wealthy who benefited from generations of proximity to white supremacy, British colonial power, they're like now seeing their power degrade over time by the revolutionary ideas that are happening around them. It's like, okay, we're safe. We're going to like be able to live our little lives until it affects us and destroys the system that we're living under. And I know a lot of our Discord members said that this book reminded them of The Great Gatsby. And I totally freaking agree, because that book is also about wealthy people who are really careless and don't care about the world that is like deteriorating around them, like during the Great Depression. And they just leave messes for other people to clean up. And you know, Salgado and Triton, they were lucky enough to leave Sri Lanka very early. And we noticed, like, in the very beginning of the book, when Triton arrives at the gas station as, like, an older man, seasoned immigrant who is successful as a restaurateur, you know, the cashier that he meets is Tamil. And that is the opposite side of the civil war that was brewing in Sri Lanka. And really, like, the difference between them is who was lucky enough to know a kind master to pretty much sponsor his escape. And even their refugee experience is, like, vastly different in like how close they were to the rich.
I think it's interesting the master-servant relationship between Triton and Mr. Salgado, because, like, I think if you take it at face value, you can see, yeah, oh, Mr. Salgado really cares for Triton. Mr. Salgado is making sure that he has a foundation to succeed, and oh, what a great relationship they have. But Mr. Salgado has always had the power over Triton, right? Like, power dynamics wise, like, Mr. Salgado definitely holds, like, the economic power, right? Like, he controls Triton's employment and housing, but he's also completely dependent on Triton for his day-to-day, you know, livelihood, right? Like, it definitely felt like towards the end, he definitely needed Triton.
Oh, more, yeah,
than Triton needed him, right?
Yeah, it is very interesting because, like, at the beginning of the book, when Triton comes into the household, there is this person who is, like, the main servant, Joseph. And Triton, like, continuously dreams up, fantasizes about him, like, having, like, a very tragic or, like,
I mean, who hasn't fantasized about the jerk at work and, like, them getting what's coming to them, right? Like, you know,
but,
like,
it's not just that. It's like, I want to take his place. Like, I want to be at the center of this household. And, you know, like, the house becomes the world to Triton. And it becomes, like, a haven from, like, all the things that are happening in Sri Lanka at the time. And, like, this is his entire world. But then in return, he becomes Mr. Salgado's entire world. He is the one that keeps everything running. He's the one who makes sure everything is clean. He's fed. Whenever they go out, he, like, packs everything. So it's like, okay, like, this is your world, but also you are the one who's running it. But you have no power, technically.
It definitely gave me flashbacks of, like, working ops for, like, nonprofit or community orgs, which is, like, I'm executing the vision of, like, these people who, like, have big dreams, but they needed someone like me to make sure things happen, things are executed. Like, you know, during the second half of the book where we get a lot of, like, the dinner party scenes, right? It's like, okay, Mr. Salgado wants this. And Triton's like, okay, that means I need to do this, 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 and this to make that happen. And it definitely invoked, like, memories of, like, having to pivot every time a boss had to brainstorm. Like, okay, you had this great idea. Now I have to figure out how to make it happen, right? The whole scene with, like, you know what? This year we're going to do Christmas because my girlfriend is Christian and I want to impress her. And, you know, it's not revealed until later. It's because of Neely, but, like, you know, we all definitely clocked, like, okay. Like, the only reason you take on, like, a new tradition is because you want to impress the girl. And the whole sequence of him, like, them trying to figure out how to cook the turkey and then trying to just, like, you know what? I can do this. You either know how to cook a bird or you don't. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah. And also, like, Mr. Salgado, like, popping into the kitchen every 15, 20 minutes being like, are you sure you've done this? Have you done this? And it's like, you've never cooked in your entire life. Like, what are you doing bossing this poor boy around and being like, did you make sure that the turkey is, like, well marinated or, like, not dry? Like, he knows what he's doing. Like, you don't know what you're doing. Like, please leave.
Yeah.
So
during the first part where Joseph was essentially the antagonist of the book, I was kind of surprised the direction that it took, because, like, I think as an older reader now, like, I'm inclined to sympathize with, like, the adults in the room, like, the parental figures. And, like, to me, I was like, okay, maybe Joseph is just trying to, like, make sure Triton is competent enough to, like, serve in this house that, like, is his whole life as well. And then we get to the sexual assault scene. I was like, oh, never mind. He's a bad guy. Like, what did you think about, like, that whole, like, sequence?
Yeah, ironically, we have read another novel by a Sri Lankan author that talks about, you know, the political turmoil in Sri Lanka, but from a domestic lens. And that one also had child abuse / sexual assault. And I'm like, oh no, not again. And, you know, I was talking about this with my husband. I was like, oh, like, I kind of wish that when I read literary fiction, like, sexual assault wouldn't just, like, be used as, like, a dramatic turning point, as, like, okay, this is like, the catalyst to the character, like, growing up. I don't know. It just feels not cheap, but, like, I kind of expect it now in literary fiction, with sometimes, like, with their weird sex scenes as well. And I'm like, I'm not so sure about this. But I do agree with you, Marvin, on, like, oh, I thought Joseph was going to be, like, a sympathetic adult, you know, so someone who is from the minority, someone who is from the oppressed class and didn't really have opportunities and is making do with what he has and coping with drinking and gambling. But then he turned out to be a horrible child abuser. And I was like, oh, okay, I guess we're just going to gloss over this, because I understand that Triton is a child and he doesn't know what he doesn't fully comprehend the trauma that he just went through. However, as readers, I was like, this kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah, I feel like I was thinking about, like, what the literary significance of this event is besides, like, a point for trauma, because eventually Joseph does get fired, but not because he sexually assaulted Triton. He gets fired because he comes drunk to work.
Yeah. So, and then I'm like, what was the point of the sexual assault? You could have just skipped to, like, you know, he. So what happens is, like, so Salgado goes on vacation along with his lady cook. So Joseph and Triton are the only ones who are left to take care of the house. And Joseph, he just is like, I'm going to bail. Like, I'm going to go drink and, like, have fun with my friends. And this is the first time Triton is able to enjoy his new independence. And this is, like, when he becomes, like, this is when his fantasies of becoming, like, the main servant and replacing Joseph really, like, intensifies.
Yeah, he's promoted from footman to butler, right?
Yeah, footman to butler. And then he catches Joseph in Mr. Salgado's room trying on, like, his personal things. And that's where he gets sexually assaulted. And I'm like, we could have just cut that out. We could have just shown Triton seeing Joseph trying on Mr. Salgado's things and then getting chased out of the room. And then Joseph goes out and then returns drunken, and then he gets fired. It was kind of weird.
I wonder how much of this is, again, like, this book was published in, like, 94, right? Like, 94 in England, in a time where I feel like, you know, like, representation hasn't become equitable today. It was probably way worse back then, right? And so I wonder if this was, like, a way for the author to get the reader to sympathize with this Sri Lankan boy who, like, otherwise they would have nothing to, like, latch on to. Because, like, reading it today as people who have read quite a bit of, like, books with post-colonial themes, like, there's a lot of things going on here that we're actually familiar with, right? Where, you know, here's a boy who's essentially sold into servitude and whose entire world is working in this house. And in his young mind, the pinnacle of what you can rise to is, like, head servant, right? It's what Joseph has. And so, like, the allegory of, like, how, you know, this structure of power forces, like, the working class to essentially fight amongst each other for a perceived limited amount of spots is something that would totally be strong to stand on its own. And Joseph was already kind of low-key, like, abusing his power and seeing Triton as, like, as a threat, right? So, I don't know if the sexual assault scene was entirely needed, because they're already, like, pitted against each other, right?
Yeah, and I don't remember if Joseph was Tamil or not, because I feel like when Triton meets him for the first time, there is, like, this undercurrent of, like, oh, I am superior to him. And there, like, I felt like there was like an underlying like prejudice, like right from the get-go. And I was like, huh, that's a little bit weird.
Yeah, he's definitely like immediately hostile towards him right from the beginning, for sure. You know, something interesting that I also noticed, and I need to go back and double check, but we don't get Triton's name until the second part of the book, after he takes over as like head housekeeper, right? So, which leads me to suspect that that name was given to him by Mr. Salgado, because Triton is definitely a name a marine biology obsessed like dude would give like his ward, right?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure if it was a name that was given to him by Mr. Salgado, but yeah, it is the first time that we get his name in like 50-60 pages, and that is like a real turning point for Triton, because it's the first time that he hears his own name in the house, and like it's the first time he's being praised as well for doing a good job, for being a good cook. So he kind of uses this moment as like, okay, this is what I live for, like this this is the meaning, this is the purpose of my life. And I'm like, wow, your world is so small, but I can understand, because
this body runs on props. Give me the props, please.
Yeah But it is interesting how Triton turns to cooking, because originally, like, you know, he was just like the cleaning boy. He was just the very bottom of the lowest rung in the household. And he didn't even have like a proper room. And once Joseph leaves, well, not once Joseph leaves, Joseph doesn't like the smell of onions, which makes Triton kind of cling to the kitchen and the lady cook, and he learns how to cook that way. It's not out of passion, it's not out of, you know, talent, which, you know, although we find out later that he does have talent, but that it was, he turned to cooking because it was survival. He didn't want to be around Joseph. And then he gets this praise, and he's like, okay, this is how I make my mark in this world, by being the perfect servant and cook to Mr. Salgado, so he doesn't need anything aside from what I give him.
Which is also like kind of parallel to a lot of immigrant stories who like go to like Western countries, right? Like we become cooks, we become people who open restaurants, and we become domestic help.
And we think our value is, you know, what we can contribute as work, like the service that we provide. And I'm like, we should be good enough just by existing. But like cooking gives Triton power. He is able to use cooking as a way to, you know, influence his relationship with people, to kind of, it's a soft power. He uses it with Nilly. He bakes like this cake with extra eggs, and he is able to kind of control the mood with like which drink, like beer or lime juice. Like he is able to determine like the temperature of the room, and he's like, okay, this is what they need to like make the conversation go the way that it benefits Mr. Salgado. And
like I forgot if it was Mr. Salgado or Neely who told him that like you have all the tools to be successful.
Oh, that's
already.
Neely.
Like,
that was Neely.
Yeah,
because Neely is, you know, she worked at a hotel, and her dream was to open up like a guest house. So she kind of understands like, okay, yeah, in order to like she's worked with cooks before. She herself is like a pretty knowledgeable foodie. So
yeah, servant industry. Yeah.
Yeah. So she's the one who kind of like is like, okay, you have talent. And she also gives him like a cookbook later for Christmas. And it's the first time Triton has ever gotten a gift. And I'm like, are you serious? Mr. Salgado didn't give you anything as like a meaningful present, even though Mr. Salgado lets Triton kind of like follow a syllabus in a way. He like leaves out books for him to like read. He has like the library and stuff.
Well, that's not until after they immigrate, right?
Yeah, it's not after they immigrate. However, he still leaves, like he still like kind of questions Triton. Like he kind of makes him, I don't know, he introduced subjects to him. It's not really like a formal education. And I think Mr. Salgado kind of has this guilt that he didn't send Triton to finish his education, even though he insisted upon it in the very beginning, kind of like gave up on it very quickly. And Triton is just like, I don't need education. I can just be a good servant and make my way in the world. And it's like, for a young person.
Again, it's people only know what they know. And if they only know life as like a servant, as someone who like their success is the well-being of the person they serve, there's no ambition to go further, right? Like to Triton, like becoming a restaurateur was never like, he never even thought about it until Mr. Salgado suggested like opening a snack shop. I mean, Mr. Salgado is an interesting character because he's definitely like, he definitely thinks he's one of the good ones, right? And then he starts off as like this very altruistic philanthropist, right? That's what he was doing. Like he was funding a foundation to study how to save the coral reef in a time when like people didn't really care about that stuff. And it's interesting to see like his character arc, which is starting off as like this very idealistic rich guy. And then kind of becoming your typical like dirtbag rich guy. And then coming back to like, okay, I need to like take care of at least this one person who served me his entire life.
Yeah, like what happens is that, you know, he gets really into coral restoration and, you know, he's doing like scientific studies on it with like his assistant. And then he gets in a relationship with Neely. And then he's like, oh, I don't need to do studies. He suddenly kind of shifts all of his efforts into this relationship, and he doesn't come out to the ocean to do the studies anymore. He's focusing more on entertaining guests and kind of developing a social life, which is not what he was doing at all as a bachelor. So his life has like completely changed. And
yeah, this is when he becomes Gatsby, right?
Yeah, it's just kind of at this point, it was like, okay, like, did you really care about the coral reef restoration, or was this just like a fun hobby to you? And that is like a thing that a lot of rich people do, right? They get into like this trend, or they, you know, find a cause, but then as soon as they find something more interesting, they're like, peace out.
Well, he also got funding from the government, right? Like,
oh, well, that too. Yeah.
Plot point. Yeah.
But he did give it up like really quickly once he had like a girlfriend. And it was just like this, I don't know, like it was very much like a, if you can escape the dread of things being destroyed, you will. Like, you will escape. And also it just like reflects on like them leaving Sri Lanka too. It's like, oh, he didn't stay to like fight for this coral reef, to, you know, fight for, you know, making the country better. He definitely had a little bit of power. He had an influence. He had money, but he just left. And it's like, well, I can't really blame him that much because people were dying, like including his best friend. But it's also just like, oh, like, It's kind of like the Titanic, you know, like the first class people are just like ready to bounce.
Yeah,
ready
they can,
to,
right?
Yeah, because they can.
Yeah, they can just settle in England and like have a flat.
Yeah. And willful ignorance is definitely like a major theme in this book. I mean, we've mentioned over and over again, like, you know, the house is the world for the characters. They don't really interest themselves in the violence that is brewing in Sri Lanka and like politics in general. And you see that also with Neely, because there's a scene where Salgado and Neely are invited to this party that's celebrating the Mahawili scheme, which is like this really large government development program that's like designed to, you know, control flooding, make irrigation facilities, and like create employment opportunities. It's like a really big deal. But Neely only cares about what is she going to wear. And she kind of has like a mental breakdown over it. And that's where we get like the sauna scene. And that's pretty much like the extent of like their concerns when it comes to like significant events that are tied to politics in Sri Lanka.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we mainly get glimpses of the political situation whenever Salgado's best friend Diaz appears, right? He does like a vibe check with Salgado, kind of, you know, lays out where things are in terms of the government and things like that. But we never get any details. And we also get, you know, a vibe check whenever there's a dinner party and we get like, and Triton gets like pieces of conversation from the guests. But everyone's kind of talking about things as if they're far away, right? And it's because they are all, because they're all essentially upper class people, like they are insulated, right? Like
they're insulated until they're not, until they're freaking murdered on the streets like Diaz. And, you know, it reminded me of politics today. It's like there's so many people who live in privilege, right? And they're like, oh, I don't think about politics, or like, oh, I, you know, I have my own life to live. Like, I can't concern myself with like the Trump administration and like the kidnappings and deportations. And it's like, okay, but what if it happened to you or to someone that you knew? Like, they don't care until it personally impacts them. And one of the scenes that really sticks out to me was like at a dinner party when the guests are gossiping about like this assassination of this tycoon, of this businessman. And the guests are saying like, oh, he flaunted his wealth during like a time of great economic inequality. And I'm like, okay, rich people, because he was like an upstart, because he started from the bottom and came to the top. But then Mr. Salgado simply calls the assassination a bad business and then just changes the subject and does not engage at all. And I'm just like, wow.
You could kind of get the sense that it did bother them, though, right? That's why they like kind of named the event out loud, because like I think this is probably the first time they realized that money will not save them from, you know, this happening to them. And, you know, part of me is a little like sad that Diaz was the one who got like murdered, while Tippi, the actual scumbag friend, is still alive.
That is not how it is. It's the sleazy ones. It's the ones who, you know, are, you know, careless, more selfish, more greedy.
Yeah.
That always manages to escape somehow.
Yeah.
Unscathed.
Because, you know, like, I really like Diaz. Like, I like that he, you know, he may not have treated Triton as equal, but he did, like, kind of, like, he was always a positive, like, interaction for the household. Whereas, like, Tippi, who is the sleazy poker friend who shows up halfway through the book during dinner parties, would treat Triton as his servant, right? And that was always like, hold on, buddy. Like, that's not cool.
You don't live here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, like, you know, I mean, Tippi was like a big part in the fallout between Nili and Mr. Salgado, because like Tippi was coming over like all the time and doing like poker nights, and Nili would just be like, I don't like him. He's like inappropriate towards me. I'm just going to leave this house because I don't want to deal with him all the time. But at the same time, Nili was having an affair. Like, she was seeing Robert, the American. And it's just very, it's interesting because Nili and Mr. Salgado were unmarried. And they were living in sin, I guess. And this creates a lot of drama and gossip for the neighborhood. So they would get a lot of people coming over and be like, oh, like, look at this couple that, you know, are so unconventional. They're so cool. They're the cool couple, right? But those people who are visiting, they contribute nothing. It's only Diaz who is like a real friend and, you know, actually brings positive influence to the house. But I do find it interesting that, like, it seemed like Nili wanted to get married, but Mr. Salgado, like, held out on her. And I wonder if it's because she is from like a lower economic class than him, and he kind of felt embarrassed and didn't really take the plunge in giving her the ring. This was just like a side, Like, this was just a tangent thought I had when I was reading the book. I was like, why didn't he put a ring on it?
Yeah, I think part of it is also just Mr. Delgado seems like the type of guy who, like, doesn't really...
think about other people.
Think about other people. Think about, like, what, like, in his
what
mind...
other people want.
Yeah, I mean, in his mind, I don't think he ever imagined that Neely would ever leave him or cheat on him, right? Like, in his mind, like, she was his. And so he didn't need to, like, lock that down. I think part of it is also... he wasn't like overtly toxic, but like during that sequence when he kind of like became like a poker guy, like he definitely did not have a handle on what was making their relationship work.
Yeah. I mean, he took her for granted. And how did you feel about Triton's infatuation crush on Neely? Like, she's the only, I guess, love interest, sexual awakening for him. And I don't know how I felt about that. So I'm curious to hear your take.
It was a little, the vibes were a little off, right? But at the same time, I had to keep reminding myself that like Triton doesn't know anybody. Like he has no friends. He has no real social life outside the house. Like she's the only female presence that is constant in that house other than like the cook that was there years ago. And so there's really no other outlet for him to like express that. Also added to the fact that like, she kind of flirted with him a lot too, right? Like she was definitely
very
like...
I don't know if she flirted with him or if it was just in his mind, you know, because we are very much in like his perspective. And it's just like, oh, does it just feel... like it's a heightened emotion because he's like so invested in pleasing Neely and like every touch just feels purposeful. And it's like,
yeah. And I guess what I mean, not really flirting, but like she was very like she was close with him. Right. She gave him presents. She acknowledged him like maybe more than like Mr. Salgado did.
Oh, way more than Mr. Salgado. Yeah. I mean, she saw his talent. Like she was like, you make really good food. I mean, she had an excellent palate. And I mean, even though she gave him special attention because she acknowledged him, I mean, obviously there is a power imbalance here. And she can, you know, if they had gotten into a relationship, she would obviously have gotten away unscathed. I mean, she kind of gotten away unscathed with her affair. Technically, she just left.
I mean,
but you know what I mean. Like, it's just like, you know, it's a very like, if they had gotten into a relationship, Triton and Neely, like it's Neely who has the power.
I think I was a little worried they were going to act on it, or he was going to act on it, but at the same time, he also like. I don't think he was able to put, he didn't have the language to describe what he was feeling like and what like he wanted, right? I think in the end, his main objective is to provide the best service to his masters, right? And at this point, he's identified Neely as like Mistress of all his woman, right? Like the lady of the house.
Mistress of the house. Yeah.
And so I don't know, like... because at this point, he's like in his early 20s, I want to say. Like, he's like 11 years old when he first enters the house.
Yeah, I would say he was like 19, 18. Yeah.
So, like, definitely like in his, like, you know, like he's undergone puberty. And I guess that's something that, like, the book doesn't really address. It's like, how does he get, like, his, you know, like, is he just like a eunuch, right? Does he just, like, not have any sexual, like, desires or any, like, outlet? Or, like,
I mean, we don't really seems see like he it, did right? have sexual desires. I mean, he did see Neely as like a sexual human being. I mean, he saw her naked at one point and he was like, oh. But also, you know, since he was sexually abused as a child, I wonder if that, you know, really colored his world on, you know, sexuality and romance. But I don't know, like it just, that part just felt so glossed over. And I felt like if you're going to include that, it really should have been baked more in to like his coming of age story and like how he, you know, like you said, is he a eunuch? Does he have sexual desires until he sees Neely? Like it, there's like a lot of questions around that.
Yeah. Maybe just something that the author just didn't want to dive into or The story he wanted to tell, right?
I did find it funny when there's a scene where Robert, the affair partner, he arrives with a journalist who wants to write an article about the impact of sea erosion on coastal villages. And, you know, Neely is wearing like this scantily cladded kimono robe. And there is definite sexual tension going on. There has been sexual tension since the Christmas dinner between the two. But Triton cannot read the room. He's just like he does not clock the attraction between the two of them. But Mr. Salgado does. He's very not pleased. And Triton's like, what's happening? Why is he like, why is the mood so weird now? So, yeah, I mean, like, I guess that kind of shows his lack of knowledge in sexual tension.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't until Neely left the house and like the vibe changes, right? Like, I think that is the turning point when Triton like starts really reflecting on his choices, right? There's that one sequence where he's in the garden and like he's starting to like kind of regret that this was his whole world,
that he didn't get his education or whatever. Oh, speaking of that, Mr. Salgado's assistant, Wijatunga, like he also had like a boy assistant at the time. And when they go visit the reef again, that boy assistant is gone. And Triton's like, hey, what happened to the kid that was like helping you out? Wijatunga is like, oh, I told him to go get his education. Like he went to go finish his school certificate. And this kind of like leads him to try and recruit Triton to join the Marxist revolution. And Triton's like, I just want to be able to cook. And, you know, also like Wijatunga is like, you know, like it's not fair that families are selling their children into servitude. Like, they should be able to get their education and make something of themselves. But ironically, he doesn't know that Triton was pretty much trafficked into serving Mr. Salgado. And
I don't even think Triton knows that he was trafficked, right?
Yeah. But it's just like very, very ironic. And it's just like, well, Triton's in this position of privilege. I mean, he is a servant, but he is benefiting from his rich master. And it's like, yeah, I mean, you're saying that it's a horrible fate, and it is for a lot of people, but it worked out for me.
Yeah, like the allegories to colonialism and capitalism, very on the nose here, right? Like,
yeah,
I've made something of myself. Why can't you, right? Like, I've pulled myself up my bootstraps, even though I've had like all the advantages of having a good master, right? Quote unquote good master.
Yeah, and it's just like, well, you could do something with that. You are in a power of you are in a position of power. You have privilege to help out your, you know, lesser fortunate neighbors. And it's like, nope, I am fine just living in this house and not caring about the world.
Yeah, but like, does he though? Because he is very much isolated in the house as well. He doesn't have any, like, he doesn't interact with anybody. He has no community. Like, his whole community, his whole world, his family essentially is.
Yeah, but he had a chance to create a community. It's not like he didn't go shopping. He goes to the fish market. He goes to get ice. Like, he is able to foster relationships with like the merchants or whatever. But he doesn't. And that's his choice, you know? It's like,
yeah,
you can. You can make friends, but if you're like just so focused on your master, then you're going to miss out on community.
He's got a good thing going, you know. He just got to put his head down and do whatever his master asks of him. Maybe anticipate his master's needs before he even knows he needs them, and he'll live a good life as far as he knows.
Well, they end up, you know, leaving Sri Lanka. They go to England. They're pretty much refugees, but they're not living like refugees because they have money. And luckily, Mr. Salgado gets a job at like an institution. So And they're able to like live in a house too. That's like something that a lot of refugees do not have. Like a lot of refugees, they end up at refugee camps and they're like in limbo. They're living in tents. And, you know, he managed to bypass all of that. And it's not until Mr. Salgado, he hears about Neely, who, you know, whose guest house had burned down because she was sympathetic to some of the Tamil guests, and she moves to America. And Mr. Salgado is like, I need to go after her. And this is when like Salgado like kind of helps set up the snack shop for Triton. And this is when Triton's like, wow, I actually have this desire to be independent, to make something out of myself, but it's been buried really, really deep because I have been a servant for so long. The idea of independence was just like not something that he even let himself think about until, you know, the master is like, hey, I'm leaving. You have to take care of yourself now.
Yeah, I think, I don't know. I feel like things worked out for him in the end, right? We see him again. We see him 20 years later in the intro of the book, and he seems to be doing well for himself, even though he's still driving the same car, like the same 20-year-old Volkswagen that he received from Mr. Salgado. And I wonder if he, like, we don't really get a lot of characterization of him 20 years from now, besides like him reflecting. But I wonder if he ever got out of that, like, that mindset too, right? Like, we don't know what kind of life he's lived, if he started a family or anything. Like, is he still just living every day serving people?
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like he doesn't have a family. And it sounds like, you know, he has this chance with this cashier who is Tamil and, you know, is afraid of his boss. And he's asking Triton to, you know, talk to his boss on his behalf because he's scared. And I'm like, okay, well, this is his opportunity to think outside of his master and himself. So I'd like to think that is like, okay, this is a turning point in his life. His life is going to be more than just him now. Yeah, I don't really see him settling down with a family. But also, like, he's in this position of, like, okay, he's successful as a restaurateur, but, like, that is his only skill. Like, he doesn't have a school certificate. He did not graduate, even though he went to the library and he studied. You know, he doesn't have a piece of paper saying that he's educated and he can get like a higher educated job. It's not like he went to culinary school either and can work like at a hotel. He is running the snack shop and later a restaurant, and his only marketable skill is cooking. So,
but it does seem like, and I really enjoy the descriptions of cooking throughout the book. It does seem like he does have the talent to understand, like, you know how, like, when we watch things like Top Chef, like the best, the people that you root for are the ones that like have like innate talent with like understanding how cooking works, the chemical reactions, the what it takes to create like maximum flavor or the right flavor profiles for your guests. And it seems like he does understand all that. So I feel like if this restaurant is still around in like, you know, 2010, like even today, like it's probably like, it could probably get like a Michelin star or a Big Gourmand somewhere, right? But at the same time, like, does he have the ambition to be that kind of chef? I don't know. Because he seems like it feels like he would be content just running the small restaurant every day, right? Like, I don't know if he has like the ambition to like, you know, go the bear, right? And like go for those like to become like a fine dining chef or something.
I think about how Mr. Salgado is an amateur scientist and he makes a lot of lists. And in the beginning, Triton tries to emulate him by writing lists of his own. And I'm like, oh, okay, maybe like his knowledge in cooking along with like him trying to like understand like how flavors work, maybe that also stems from like the scientific methods that he kind of soaked up from being around Mr. Salgado. I do wonder about that, but
yeah,
cooking and science are very like hand in hand.
Yeah. I just looked up the passage where they're talking about the fate of Neely, and I don't think she's in the States. She's back in Sri Lanka. Because in the end...
Oh, she's back in Sri Lanka?
Yeah.
Okay, I thought she went to America.
No, Robert went back to America. She ended up being, like, I guess, trying to start a business, but then it got destroyed during the Civil War. And now she's in, like, a sanatorium off Gaya Road, which is a road in Sri Lanka. I had to Google that. And so, because I remember at the end when Mr. Salgado leaves to go find Neely, he's going back to Sri Lanka. Like, he's going back into the Civil War. Which is why, like, it's kind of sad because he probably got killed, right? He never came back,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, he never came back.
And I guess thematically that, you know, he is someone who had it all but lost it and now, like, kind of lives in the past, or he lives in regret. And, like, Neely was the one thing that, like, I guess it's his, like...
Neely becomes Daisy. She is the green light at the other end of the pier. Yeah.
Yeah, willing to risk his life to go and, like, save.
I mean, I like Neely, but also I'm like, don't go back for an ex that you're not even sure loves you back. I mean, it would be one thing if he, like, tried to have contacts to help her come to England, but he's going back to Sri Lanka. And I'm like, okay. I don't know if you understand that you were very lucky the first time you were able to leave.
But that's kind of, I feel like that's true to his character, right? He's not someone who thinks about privilege. Right, like if privileged people don't think about their own privilege, like that it's a luxury, right? That they don't have to think about how much better they have it, and so I think that does lead to questionable decisions, like going back to the war zone to find the woman that got away.
Yeah,
it's a very romantic notion, and I guess like, that's also true to his character, right? He's a romantic. He wanted to save the ocean, now he wants to save his ex girlfriend.
Yeah, I mean, he should have put a ring on it, you know.
Yeah. All right. So I guess as we wrap up our discussion of Reef, any final thoughts about the book that we read?
For a book that came out in like the early 90s, still very relevant, echoes of history, just keep repeating.
Yeah.
I do think the book, you know, helped a lot of us understand Sri Lankan history. By making us freaking go to Wikipedia, like, because it was just like, what is happening? Because we don't get a lot of details on it. We just know that things are bad. And that is very much in Triton's perspective. Like, how would he know, like, all of the political implications and details that are happening? It just gets so bad to a point where he hears whispers of it in dinner conversations. So I'm like, okay, well, I want to know what the F is actually happening in this country that is getting so bad that they have to leave. So I think it served its purpose of kind of spreading awareness in a very subtle way. I do wonder again, like, how much history readers knew when this book came out, especially if they were British, because there were a lot of Sri Lankan refugees that came to Britain. And yeah, I mean, we don't really read a lot of older books in this podcast, simply because Asian American, Asian diaspora literature has just evolved, and we're able to have like more representation and depth to some characters. And in a way, like, I saw archetypes in this book, and I was like, I don't know if they really felt like unique characters to me. We mentioned like Great Gatsby, and it's like, okay, those are also archetypes, and I'm like, okay. I wonder if I read this book when I was like, if I was still an adult in like the 90s, like it. I just like do wonder, because like we've read so many diasporic literature now, and
yeah. I mean, I did enjoy reading this book. I think Ramesh has a very beautiful prose. Like, his descriptions of the land, the house, the gardens, the food were very descriptive and very like, it's almost tactile. You can taste and like smell the food that Triton was preparing for all the dinner parties and for, you know, Mr. Salgado and his guests. I think definitely feeling the echoes of the past, especially like I mentioned, like, you know, Triton as someone who his whole world is this house that he takes care of, and he gets bits and pieces of the outside world through, you know, through conversations that he overhears. Like, this is like a time before the internet, before like 24/7 news channels, before like everyone knows everything at the speed of like data, right? But at the same time, it also reflects our own experiences in the last 10 years as well, which is like these last 10 years, we've all become hyper aware of our government and its politics, because it's affecting us now, right? Like, you know, the luxury of being...
It also makes willful ignorance even like more egregious in this timeline, because I'm like, you have the world at your fingertips. News is bombarded everywhere. So if you're like, I don't do politics, I don't follow the news, I'm like, what privilege you have.
Yeah.
And also
the luxury, like, of being able to say that it doesn't affect you, or to assume that it doesn't affect you, even though it definitely does and definitely will. Right. And I think we're all at that point now where it's like, if you don't think this affects you, then like, what world are you living in? Right. Because it's not our world. And in a way, it's never been our world, because we do live as minorities in this country. At the same time, we're also part of a community that has its own like flavor of privilege as well, right? Like this,
and also colonial mindset. There's so many Asians out there who align themselves with white people in power, thinking that it will shield them. And I'm like,
yeah,
no, it doesn't work like that.
And I really did enjoy reading this book as like an allegory for colonial mindsets, right? Because Triton is definitely 100% colonized, right? Like he can't imagine a world where he isn't serving his master, serving his boss. That's kind of what colonization wants from its workers, right? From its subjects. It's like obedience.
Don't go to
service.
College.
Yeah. Right.
Don't go to college. Keep working. That's, you know, the way you can contribute to society. Capitalism only works if there are people at the bottom who are being exploited. So
yeah. All right. Well, I guess with that, that'll do it for our discussion of Reef by Ramesh Gunasekara. If you have any thoughts on the book or on our discussion of it, please let us know either on Goodreads or on our Discord server. As always, we love to hear your feedback on our conversations. And yeah, as we enter a brand new month, it's time for a brand new book club pick. So it's my turn to pick this month. And you know, since it is February, the love month, I figure it's about time we checked in with another love story. So for the month of February, we will be reading Behind Frenemy Lines by Zen Cho, which features a rivals to lovers romance between two lawyers in London. Zen Cho, of course, is the author of Sorcerer to the Crown, which was one of our very earliest book club picks and still one of my favorite books that we've read for this book club. I really love that book's mix of Regency England high society with magic and wizards. And I remember really enjoying Zen's ability to write witty banter. So I'm really excited to see how that translates into a more contemporary romantic comedy. Excited to chat about that with y'all at the end of the month. And as always, if you are a Patreon supporter of Books and Boba, stay tuned for our reading schedule for our live discussion online. But yeah, with that, thanks for listening to our discussion of Reef by Ramesh Gunasekara. And we'll see you all next time on Books and Boba. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Books and Boba. This podcast was hosted by Marvin Yue and Rhee Ryu and edited and produced by Marvin Yue. Follow the book club on Twitter and Instagram by going to @BooksandBoba and engage with us on Goodreads on our Goodreads group. You can also check out past episodes of the podcast by going to booksandboba.com and by subscribing to us on your favorite podcast app. Don't forget, you can support Books and Boba and Asian American authors by purchasing books at our bookshop.org account. Check out the link in our show notes and also at booksandboba.com. Books and Boba is a proud member of the Potluck Podcast Collective, a collective of Asian American hosted podcasts featuring unique voices and stories from the Asian diaspora. Learn more about the collective and check out our fellow Potluck shows by visiting the website podcastpotluck.com. Thanks for listening.
Hey, sports fans. Welcome to Asians in Hockey. You may not realize it, but there's a rich history of Asians and AAPI folks who have contributed to the legacy of the greatest game on ice. From classic legends like Julie Chu and Robin Bawa, to current greats like Lia Lum and Nick Suzuki, and even rising stars like Akane Shiga and Jason Robertson. We'll cover their stories, celebrate their accomplishments, and learn about their impact on the sport of hockey. I'm Nate Nakao, former Beer League player, occasional youth hockey coach, and longtime hockey fan, and I'll be your host as we take a look at the rise of Asians in hockey. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pocket Casts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Part of the Potluck Podcast Collective.
Hungry for spicy food and even hotter conversations? Craving community and authentic storytelling? Then join the table. This is Minor Legends, a new comedy fiction podcast supported by Potluck. Pull up every week with me, Angela Wong Carbone, and follow the stories of me and my friends as we serve up tasty tales of what it means to be Asian American at our weekly dinner hang. If you enjoy deep dishing on absurd stereotypes like tiger moms who tutor your dating game rather than grades, the insanity of your parents' immigration story, to the legend of that one good Asian cousin you can never live up to, then pull up a seat and grab a plate. Featuring dinner guests like Ronnie Chang, Brian Park, Usama Siddiqui, Celia Au, Perry Young, Supriya Ganesh, and more. It's a tasty rotation that'll leave you belly laughing and steeped in relatable and spicy conversations. Can you take the heat? Listen now for free wherever you get your podcasts.